All right, I guess we'll get started. I spent a little bit of time kind of in the woods behind my house praying and thinking and kind of considering what to share. I don't feel like I have a ton, but a few kind of thoughts and verses came to mind, and I think I can kind of at least maybe say a couple things about that, and we can maybe discuss together. You guys can bring up things as well. I was just kind of thinking about this group and all of you, and kind of asking the Lord, like, what do we need to hear? What would be useful, Lord, from your heart? What do you think about when you think about this kind of strange group that's gathered here? And I certainly don't feel like I'm like qualified to instruct you by any means, but somehow I'm in this chair, so I was just kind of asking the Lord kind of for his I don't know, his perspective and his view. And some of the same things kind of came to my mind that often do. Just going to try to resist the urge to apologize for saying the same things again, and that doesn't count. I didn't, I was reflecting again on the fact that we don't we don't have there's not a this is not a complicated gospel that's in need of like a great amount of like detailed bullet points and PowerPoint slides and kind of like correcting everybody's understanding of all these like complex things. The gospel is very simple, and that's why I think we always kind of find ourselves saying, like, I think when we're really sharing from our heart, then we find ourselves saying the same things over and over again, because the thing the Lord's not trying to do is to bring us new information and new concepts and clarify complicated things, but he's trying to encourage and pull and animate hearts in a travel, in a journey. And it's not a complicated journey, but it is a difficult journey. And that's kind of where my thoughts kept just swirling around this afternoon, was just about this. This isn't complicated, but it's a real travel. It's a real journey. And we're not what we're lacking is not new concepts, new ideas, new teachings on new topics. But what I think is always like useful and valuable and feels kind of like suited to the state of like our group is encouragement in the journey, and encouragement to travel on with the Lord, and encouragement that we like continually, like day after day, speak with each other, encourage each other, that we all be found truly walking with the Lord. And not just believing things, not like doing meetings in the right way, not, anything like that, but walking with the Lord in a real travel, a real journey. And that's also like what I was feeling like an appreciation for all of you. And like Jason mentioned, we don't have like a lot of new people here. We're not the best at like attracting crowds of new people. But like there's something that I was thinking about, that maybe we have new folks online. I don't know. You're welcome if there are new folks online. My name's Jared. The masses aren't like breaking down our door to kind of like join our fellowship. But what feels sweet to me and what feels precious is I feel like I'm with a group of people who have begun to travel somewhere, who've begun to leave something and realize that their lives are about going somewhere with the Lord, coming out of something and trusting in the Lord in a long journey, in a long travel. And that is so neat, and that is encouraging. And I think that that's the, I don't know, that it feels kind of, I always kind of have this feeling when I try to share in front of you guys or other people. It's like, I can't, I want to, with all my heart, I want to speak what's like real and what feels alive and living to me. And so, but I always kind of feel like then I end up kind of preaching to myself. You know what I mean? And so I hope some of you are going through some similar things that I am. That's all I got. And I'm afraid of just kind of, I'm afraid of just veering into what like my brain can do with words, you know what I mean? And so I'd rather just like say, you know, maybe bring up some of the same verses you guys have heard me bring up, if that's what kind of like where the Lord has me and what I feel like I have like a little bit of sight or a little bit of, sometimes it's like sight, sometimes it's just like what I need from the Lord, you know, too. And so all I can kind of say is kind of point you in some of those to those same things. But yeah, I've been feeling thankful for you guys. I've been feeling like we, for some reason, these conferences always kind of make me reflect on like, who are we and what is our group and what is this strange little collection of people that gather. But I feel thankful for us. I feel like I feel like we've got our hearts and our sort of faces like set roughly in the right direction, you know, and I think we're like sincerely seeking to like walk. And I don't know that we know exactly where we're going or that we're making all the exact right choices along the way, but I feel like we've like seen and felt what needs to be turned away from and what needs to be turned to. And I feel like with some real I feel real humility in all of you that like we're asking for the way. We're asking, like I was, one of the verses that kind of came to my mind sort of early here was this verse I really loved, Jeremiah 50. Jeremiah 50, verse 4 and 5, it says, "In those days and in that time, says the Lord, the children of Israel shall come, they and the children of Judah together. With continual weeping they shall come and seek the Lord their God. They shall ask the way to Zion." Sorry, told you, don't take much lately. They shall ask the way to Zion with their faces toward it. They shall ask the way to Zion with their faces toward it, saying, "Come and let us join ourselves to the Lord in a perpetual covenant that will not be forgotten." It's a lot of things I like about that verse. I just like the picture of a people who, I get this feeling like they don't know exactly where they're going. They're asking the way, and it's hard. They're hurting and it's hard and with weeping, and they've got their faces set one direction, and they're not, like so I say, like, what, that's what I feel about us. We're like roughly going the right direction. We don't know exactly where we're going. We don't know how to do things perfectly. We don't know how to handle our meetings or our families or all our stuff, you know, but I think we've set our faces in the right direction, and I think that we're asking. And I love the kind of the end of that too. Come, let us join ourselves to the Lord in a perpetual covenant, like kind of a resolution of heart that says, I've lived in Babylon, you know, I've been there. I know it has its delights and its pleasures and its false light and its false everything. I am gonna turn my back to that, and I don't know exactly where I'm going, and I don't know why I'm weeping, but I gotta find the way to Zion, and I gotta start walking and asking the way. And that's like, it's kind of what I feel like is, if I could kind of put my finger on what feels like precious about our group, is that I think we've begun to walk. And that's a beautiful thing. And And we'd like to, I do want to be friendly and welcoming to new people. I want to tell everyone in the world, like, come walk with us. We don't know exactly where we're going, but if you want to ask the way with us, if you want to meet some people that are trying to leave Babylon and that realize that, that can't be it, you know, then that's kind of all we've got. But that is, it's kind of all you need. You know what I mean? Is a heart that says, let's join ourselves to the Lord. Let's not settle for a name. Let's not settle for words. Let's not sit around in Babylon and like pretend that it's Zion, like paint the word Zion over like our house in Babylon. No, let's get up and let's walk. And it might be hard. It's going to be hard. It's not going to be, only be hard. The Lord is, I love that the verse Jason mentioned this morning. Like the Lord is looking all over the world to support, to strengthen, to encourage those who would give their hearts to him. I mean, it doesn't take that much to kind of like feel for these people walking out of Babylon and being like, man, the Lord was with those people, right? He's with us. I believe it. I really do. Let's resolve that we're going to walk and we're going to and that we're going to persevere. I've been thinking about there's lots of things written in the Bible, I think, for travelers. I think there's lots of scriptures that are that make sense for people asking the way to Zion and dealing with what it means to make that long journey. You know, there's lots of interesting verses and advice and stories and pictures that are all kind of like surrounding us with this great, like, you know, like it says, a cloud of witnesses, not in the, you know, souls as well as stories and pictures, kind of all saying, like, yeah, it's a journey. I mean, there's the kind of things we talk about all the time from the very beginning, like the Lord starts dealing with Abraham and says, you got to come out, you got to leave everything, you got to try, you got to, I'll show you where you're going. I'm not going to give you this perfect destination, but you got to come out of that and you got to walk with me. And then he deals with Israel and he makes the salvation that he gives them be a journey, an exodus through a wilderness. And we could just kind of go on and on, but there are many, many things that I think are kind of designed in the scriptures to like encourage drooping hearts. I was thinking about this passage in Hebrews 12. I'm attempting to like read the whole chapter, but I shared this with my family just like a few days ago. Hebrews 12, verse 3 says, well, right before that, it says, like, let us run with endurance the race set before us. That's another good way of saying it. It's a race. Takes endurance. It's a great race. There's nothing else we should be doing, but it's like it's a race, you know, and endurance races are require endurance. Run with endurance the race set before us, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And then this verse is the one that I was thinking of. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become discouraged. Sorry, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. And he goes on, and there's more there, but for some reason that I just like it jumped out at me a little bit that like he's specifically like telling us what to do, like to look to Jesus, to consider how he, for the joy set before him, despising the shame, like went through all that he went through, who endured such hostility, and like, what, why are you telling me this? What is the Holy Spirit doing or trying to like communicate to me? And it's like he's trying to grab a hold of us and say, like, this is specifically like geared towards you in your lives and your journey and what it's like to be like in the body, in because there is a great danger of being like weary and discouraged in your souls. You know, just the fact that he's saying this, like, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. And that just kind of like, I don't know if it's, this is hard to explain, but I've found it like encouraging to like we have a journey, we have a travel that we have to travel. And if we are really walking with the Lord in this journey, there are going to be passages of this travel, there are going to be portions of this journey where we are going to be tempted to be very weary and discouraged. And I'm not at all saying that's all there is, because there were, like, we can look in all the types and pictures and see that there were moments when the rocks were gushing out water and they were celebrating and they were like rejoicing over the fall of their enemies. Like, there's that too. But like we often say, like, there's so much, I don't know, there's so much talk in the world and in the church of today about how everything's going to be easy and everything is completed and everything is perfected. And there's such an ignorance of what the real Christian traveler feels and experiences and is going to, that like there's this huge like load of nonsense that I think we need to sort of slough off and reject and realize that there's dozens, there's hundreds of verses like this that where the Lord, where his apostles are specifically grabbing us and saying, like, you are going to need something when you feel weary and discouraged. You know, I was thinking about the verse in Luke 18 where the little mini kind of parable or story about the woman who was seeking like justice from the unjust judge. And but the very I think the phrase that the Lord uses it, and when he introduces that parable, is he says, like, the Lord told them this parable so that they would always pray and not lose heart. And I really liked that phrase. I was like, oh, thank you. Like, I sometimes struggle with losing heart. And then I go, like, why am I struggling to lose, like, why do I feel like I'm sometimes on the edge of losing heart? And then I think, oh, Jesus like said this so that I wouldn't lose heart, so that like fighting through and battling through things that are going to make us want to lose heart is not an indication that we've missed our way. Does that make sense? You know, and a lot of people will tell you that, and like the devil will tell you that, and your own flesh is going to tell you that, and you'll find people in the church that'll tell you, like, you shouldn't have to feel like you're gonna lose heart, you know, or you shouldn't have to feel weariness or discouragement. But there's tons in there. And like still in Hebrews 12, I was thinking about, like, he goes on and says, don't despise the chastening of the Lord. Don't be discouraged when you're rebuked by him. There's a tendency, and there's something in us that would be very, very easy for us to be like discouraged by the chastening of the Lord, by the difficulties we go through, by the things in this journey that are not easy. And so there's like just scripture after scripture. Don't be discouraged. The Lord chastens whom he loves. If you feel the chastening of the Lord in a way that is a struggle not to be discouraged under, that means you are a legitimate son. You know, there's all these things like this. And then a little further on in the chapter, it says, therefore strengthen the hands which hang down and the feeble knees. Make straight paths for your feet, so that what is lame may not be dislocated, but rather be healed. And that like, there's a need for that. I think with like real travelers, sometimes we have to kind of, that's like what we have to do, is strengthen each other's hands. And it's not like us doing it. I mean, that's like the Lord's heart, is that we would not give up. He knows we're going to face weariness. He knows we're going to face discouragement. He knows that nobody likes chastening. You know, he knows that nobody likes the scourging of the Lord, that but it's the only thing that will produce real righteousness, real happiness, real peace. The Lord is so good and so wise, and he never brings us into pain or through pain out of like a desire to see us hurt. Absolutely not. I'm convinced that the Father is like always designing things to use the least amount of suffering with us, as because he's a good father, you know, but he's a good enough father to bring us through suffering if that's the only thing that will. He's a good enough father to chasten us, and he knows it hurts, and he told us it would hurt, and he said, "Don't get weary, don't get discouraged. Strengthen the knees that are out of joint, and the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees. It's okay. It's there's a need, I think, for some of these things, and I had a Christianity for a bunch of years where. Where everything was supposed to be all finished and all settled and all, you know, perfect. And I was like painting the letter Zion on my like house in Babylon, you know, and I didn't need those verses because when things got hard, I just did something else. I just escaped. I just numbed myself with some sort of entertainment or some sort of like I had some other I had My Christianity didn't force me into this place where, God, if you don't like, you don't ha like, I'm weary, I'm discouraged right now. I remember not being discouraged, but right now I feel like this is like I'm barely holding on, you know? And I had answers before when I was in Babylon. Now, they weren't real answers, I understand that, but I had ways out. I had ways I could unplug my brain, I could turn things off, I could just, and now I don't have any of that, you know? And you've kind of sometimes, I mean, the pictures are so perfect. The way that Israel found themselves like out in a wilderness, like that is the last thing they expected. And but yeah, I used to have things I could do. I used to have resources, and now I need like verses like that that say like, don't lose heart. Pray always and don't lose heart. And I'm thankful that I'm thankful that those verses are there because I think, okay, this is the way. You know, I think this is the way. And that's where I love that I'm doing this with you guys because I think we're all going like, this is the way, right? You know, yeah, it's definitely not that. It's not back there. You know, and so sometimes I kind of feel sort of low, and all I can sort of say is like, I'm a little confused about exactly roughly where we're heading, but I'm definitely sure it's not that, you know? And some days that's all I got, but other days it's more clear, like, okay, this is the way. Let's keep walking. And we need some of these things. We need to be encouraged. We don't need like five steps. We don't need like a deep theology of X, Y, or Z. We just kind of sometimes need to believe that it's the Lord dealing with us, chastening us, encouraging us, doling out the seasons, knowing what to mix, knowing when to give us water, knowing when to starve us, you know? A verse that I know I quote a lot is like Psalm 78, 22. Psalm 78 is sort of this, it's this long psalm that kind of like rehearses all of the things that the Lord did and bringing them out of Egypt and then their rebellion, their murmuring against him, them saying like them testing God, asking for the food they wanted, speaking from their heart. Can God prepare a table? Can he give bread? Can he provide meat? And it's a long psalm, but right in the middle of it, it talks about the Lord's anger against them in this season. And in verse 22, it says, where he says, his anger came up against Israel because they did not believe in God and did not trust in his salvation. And that verse has hung with me for like a bunch of years now because it struck me that If you imagine what Israel was going through, like they had been delivered from slavery and probably nothing went the way they thought it was going to go. They got out of Egypt, and then the Lord brought them straight into the desert and let them go 3 days with absolutely no water, let them get thirsty, let them get hungry, brought them the food that he was giving them had they didn't like it. There was, like just it's not what they thought, not what they wanted. Moses goes and like at one point disappears up onto the mountain for 40 days and they don't know where he is. They don't like where they are. They're talking about going back. They're saying this is definitely not the promised land. This was not what was advertised. They're like out there in this desert struggling and that's when all of these things rise up in them and they're like, give us meat and let's go back and let's all these things that the Lord is like condemning them for. And the fact that he says they did not believe his salvation just kind of like hit me one time, and I think about it a lot. They did not trust in his salvation. And kind of like what that implies to me is that everything that they were going through, that the Lord in his great wisdom, like the Lord was the one who led them out into the desert. He knew the desert was there. He was the one that made it so the first thing they did is go 3 days without water, He was the one that knew they weren't going to like what they were eating and it wasn't going to satisfy their appetites. He knew all of that. He knew that they were going to get confused when Moses goes up on the mountain and they don't know where he is. Everything he understood. And every part of that was perfectly designed to do, I think, for them with the least amount of pain as could possibly be devised by wisdom and love to like purify them and give them everything that they could ever want. And but they didn't understand any of that, and they grumble and they murmur and they complain and they turn back in their hearts to the Lord. But all of that, what I'm saying is, all of that was his salvation. And what he the criticism he made against them is he said, you didn't trust in my salvation. And it didn't have like big letters on it, like this is my salvation. That they didn't think they were rejecting his, they didn't think they were not trusting his salvation. They just didn't like the desert and they didn't like the manna and they didn't like the hunger and they didn't like the thirst, But someday they realized what the Lord said here. They like this generation. And I always kind of think of these weird thought experiments too, but I imagine this generation that like really missed it in the wilderness and with if they had come to see what the Lord wrote down right here, like, oh my goodness, that was his salvation. And if they could then, I always imagine going back in time. If they could go back in time and go do that again, like what would they do, right? It would still be the desert. It would still be hard. They'd still be thirsty, still be confusing. But I kind of imagine them and saying, like, what's the perfect way to have handled that situation, And I think what I imagine is that they would just sit there in the desert and say, Father, I don't like this. And I am hungry and I am thirsty. But I trust in your salvation. And I don't know where Moses is. And this is not what I expected, but I just kind of imagine them saying, I trust in your salvation. And sorry. That is, I think, what some of us need to like feel. I think, again, I'm preaching to myself, but there are things we're going to feel and face as travelers, as the Lord deals with us in his like incredible wisdom and incredible love, and the things he knows about our hearts that we don't even know. There are things we're going to feel that aren't going to make sense. There are times when we're going to feel good, and then there's other times where we're going to feel like it's too much. I can't do it. I'm weary. I want to lose heart. And I find some comfort from kind of like thinking about like, oh, I don't have to have a time machine because I'm in my trial right now, and you guys are in your trials. We're on the journey. We're walking through the wilderness, and like now is the time where we can say, like, Father, I trust in your salvation. and everything doesn't have to make sense. And in fact, that's like the whole thing that he's doing is like using our confusion, using our I don't know, all of our lack, all of our weakness as part of this like perfect desert, as part of this perfect furnace for our heart, as this part of him using time to purify us and to prepare us to open wide the doors for us for eternal happiness and to like I like that verse where it says to abundantly supply to us an entrance into the kingdom of God. That's what he's wanting to do. He's wanting to do that. He loves us. He's wise. He's good. How are the doors flung open to the kingdom of God? By humbling us, by reducing us, by weakening us, by purifying us, by letting us hunger and thirst, letting us feel what's inside of us, let us facing things, let us face our own confusion, let us face all kinds of things, and that is his salvation. I you know what I mean? It's not, I mean, that's I don't know if it's proper to say if that's is that the obviously like his salvation is like you could say it's like bigger than that, but what we kind of our experience as those people who are trying to set our faces towards Zion and walk is that he is going to like make everything that's happening around us conspire for our good. And many of those things are going to be not what we expected and not what we wanted. And there's a ton of there's so many scriptures that seem to like speak of that. Truly, like it's not, I believe with all my heart, it's not all difficulties. It's not all confusion and trial, but there will be enough of it. There'll be enough of that to test your heart. There'll be enough of that to make you need some of these verses, you know? That's been my experience at least. Another one that I like a lot is in the book of James, chapter 5, James 5, verse 7, a few verses following. Therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until it receives the early and latter rain. You also be patient. Establish your hearts. I like that phrase a lot. Establish your hearts. Set your heart. Strengthen those knees that are out of joint. Like, feel a purpose and a resolve in your heart to make a perpetual covenant with the Lord. This is not going to be, this is not a day's work. This, you know, that's kind of like what I feel from that. It's like, establish your heart. Like, settle it in your heart. Or Psalm 84, set your heart on pilgrimage. It's going to take patience. You're going to pass through things. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. I like this part too. My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. It's like another one of those things. Like, you're going to. If we're really traveling with the Lord, I think we're going to need some examples of suffering and patience. So we'll have a measure of that. Well, there's enough of that that the Spirit thought to make sure this made it into the Bible. Think about the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed who endured. You have heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. I like that a lot. Like, the fact that he brings up prophets and Job and sets this before us as kind of the thing we need. This is like, again, this is like normal Christians are supposed to consider like Jeremiah and Job, you know? And to be patient and to consider their endurance, remembering that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. And you've heard of the perseverance of Job, and you've seen the end intended by that. We've all read Job, and we know it ends well, right? You know. But wow, I was thinking about Job and how, like, I don't know. It just kind of like seems to me that it's a lot of really amazing things about that book, but seems to be like the Lord kind of dealt with Job in that way for all of the Lord's reasons. But it sort of seems like to me, it seems like one of the reasons is that he put in this record for thousands of years after that, this like story of a man who, like nobody can compare their problems to him, and his don't seem worse. You know what I mean? I was like imagining the Lord like talking to Job after it's all said and done, and the Lord being kind of like, or not the Lord, Job kind of saying, "Lord, that was intense," and him saying, "Well, see, I needed a book in the Bible that everybody could always read, and then like your story would seem worse than theirs." And it's going to be encouraging for thousands of years, and you didn't realize that at the time, but that's like part of what was going on. And you can imagine Job kind of going like, "So you picked me?" But I don't know. Like that's there's that book was like none of us like I've never had anything even like remotely close to like what Job has gone through, you know, and I'm thankful for him. But I've felt something in me that has to like fight to say, though you slay me, yet I will trust in you, you know, like, and that the things that kind of the Lord showed in that man and kind of how we get this like beautiful perspective of we get to see his life and we get to read what happened, and we get to like root for him and kind of be like, isn't that incredible that the Lord took everything away? And he said, "Naked I came into the world, naked I'll go out. You know, blessed be the name of the Lord." When like the devil and his wife were saying, "Curse God and die," he said, "No way." And it's like, I kind of feel like he was doing that same thing. I trust in your salvation. Though he slay me, yet I will trust in him, you know, and to like, and we can sort of like root for him and say, like, it's gonna be okay, Job. And I'm not sure he perfectly handled it either. But wow, like that, you know, that's an incredible story. And it's not just a random bizarre thing that happened. It's like James says, like, by the Spirit, like, think about Job. Think about what the Lord did. See his love, his mercy, and his compassion. Consider the end of it, you know. And we have all these like encouragements, but we really do have to, I think, we kind of like kind of establish our hearts. We kind of got to set, I don't know, we got to resolve within ourselves that we're going to walk, we're going to travel. There's not that many travelers, you know, and these experiences we have, these things we feel while we're walking from Babylon to Zion, they're weird and they're not that many people talking about it, you know? And that's kind of, again, what I was feeling is like, I want you guys to be encouraged. I feel encouraged. I don't know how to measure the distance between Zion and Babylon. I'm not sure how far along we are, but like, let's travel. Let's not get weary. Let's not be discouraged. Let's kind of set our hearts for the long haul. Let's be willing to weep. Let's be willing to sow in tears and reap in joy. Isn't that what Jesus was kind of always talking about? It's like the whole world is grabbing a false happiness right now, and they're going to weep and mourn. But blessed are you if you mourn and weep now. Let's do that. There's, you know, let's sow in tears. Let's pass through. I gotta read Psalm 84. Psalm 84, verse 5. Blessed is the man whose strength is in you, whose heart is set on pilgrimage. They pass through the valley of Baca. They make it a spring. I used to always read the NASB, and the NASB had a little note when it said Baca that said weeping. I'm not sure that that's what it means, but I always associated that. Blessed is the man whose strength is in you, whose heart is set on pilgrimage. As they pass through the valley of Baca, they make it a spring. The rain also covers it with pools. They go from strength to strength. Each one appears before God in Zion. I really like that. Set our hearts on pilgrimage. That's just something I feel for myself a lot. It's just like I feel for you guys, and I feel for whenever I kind of see and feel, I think like people really waking up to the truth and people starting to take their first couple steps out of Babylon. I kind of want to say like, okay, like, that's awesome. Now, like, set your hearts. This is not going to be. Because we imagine, we take a step up, we go like, oh, I'm in Babylon. And we imagine we're going to stroll right over to Zion. We're going to sit down, you know? And I think people get confused. They get weary. They get spun around. And a lot of them go back, or a lot of them sit down. But like, let's not do that. You know, I think we've begun something. I think we've found a little bit of the way. But let's not like rest and say, oh, we figured it out. We figured out to do silent meetings. We figured XYZ out. Or we now know, like, or even we can just turn around and say all the things that are bad about Babylon. Like, what's the use of just like saying what's wrong with Babylon if we're not like daily taking steps and daily journeying and daily battling and drinking the cups that the Lord has for us? You know, I was thinking about how the Lord, you know, we're so ready to think that we're ready to rule with, ready to reign with Christ. You know, the disciples who, you know, got their mom to come and ask, you know, like, hey, can you get these two guys to sit at your right hand and your left hand? You know, and they kind of like imagine, like, that seems like that's probably the next step, right, Lord? Is you're going to establish your kingdom and we're going to be right there with you, like ruling. And the way Jesus spoke to them, I think, is so interesting. He says, you know, the baptism that I'm about to be baptized with, can you be baptized with it? Will you drink the cup? You know, he starts speaking to them of baptisms and cups, and I don't think they knew hardly anything what he was talking about, and he said, yeah, sure, you know. But I liked what Aaron said at the end of the meeting this morning about like if we love him and follow him, then there will be suffering because he loves us, because we're in a condition that requires a transformation. We're in a condition that requires a remedy that's going to be painful. You know, there's a process that we have to go through. There's a real thing that the Lord needs to do in our heart. And sadly, in some measure or other, maybe it's more or less for different people, but it's going to there's a cup that has to be drunk, you know? There is a baptism. And because he loves us, because there's something that has to be taken out of us, because there's a life and a nature that was born in Egypt, that was born in Babylon, that has to lay down its life, that has to die. There's a cross that has to be picked up. There's a chastening that we have to like undergo, and none of those things are pleasant. I mean, it literally says that there in Hebrews 12. Nobody likes chastening, you know? I'm really glad that verse is in there. Doesn't seem pleasant to anybody. But afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. That's what the Father wants for us. And so we got to trust him, and if we love him, he's going to bring us through a journey. If we love him and want to follow him, then we're going to follow him through a process. We're going to follow him through a death. He's going to take us through chastening. He's going to bring us into a wilderness. He's going to starve what needs to be starved and reveal what needs to be revealed and confuse what needs to be confused and weaken what needs to be weakened. and then encourage and then heal. It's like the Lord kills and makes alive. He wounds and then he heals. He does all of that. And are we willing to go with him? Are we willing to travel with him? Are we willing to be with him where he is? Or do we just say, like, Lord, I signed up for the victory. I signed up for the I signed up for something immediate, I didn't sign up for this wilderness, Like, let's not do that. Let's give him our hearts, and he knows how much we have to suffer. Like, I like that verse where Ananias is kind of like talking to the Lord about Saul became Paul, and the Lord says, I'll show him how much he must suffer. He knows. Let him pick the seasons, let him pick the times, let him decide how much confusion and how much trouble and how much encouragement, and just give all of that to the Lord and say, I trust in your salvation. You pick for me. You pick the seasons for me. You decide if when this hard thing is over. You decide when this good season is over. You pick, Father, not me. Where you go, I'll be with you. If we need to go into suffering together, well, let's do that. If I need to drink a cup with you, Lord, let's drink it. Just be there with me, please, Lord. And that's a little bit what I felt when I heard Aaron say that. Like, let's be let's or that verse in Hebrews that says, let's go outside the camp with him, bearing his reproach. Let's go be with him. Let's go with him to the cross. Let's go. Let's not. Maybe what I'm trying to say is, like, let's not put our plans or our agendas or our expectations on it, on what he's going to do with our lives or what it's going to feel like. Let's just cling to him and let him lead us. And this made me think of this verse, and I wrote it. It's in 2 Samuel 15. Second Samuel 15. It's in the middle of this strange part of David's life where his son Absalom is rebelling against him and kind of chasing him out of Jerusalem. And David is about to flee from Jerusalem and from his palace and from the city, and there's this little exchange with this guy named Ittai the Gittite. So they're all getting ready to flee from Jerusalem, and this is 2 Samuel 15:19. It says, then the king said to Ittai the Gittite, where are you? Oh, sorry, why are you also going with us? Return and remain with the king, for you are a foreigner and also an exile from your own place. In fact, you came only yesterday. Should I make you wander up and down with us today, since I know not where? Return and take your brethren back. Mercy and truth be with you. So this is like a guy who had, like, literally the day before he came to visit King David, And I don't know exactly where he came from, like wherever Gittites lived. But he had just gotten there, and it happened to, like, he showed up at the time when, like the worst day of, like, David's life, And so David says, look, go, you just got, like, I'm literally fleeing for my life into the wilderness. I don't know what the Lord's going to do with me. Go home. But then it says, but Ittai answered the king and said, as the Lord lives and as my Lord the king lives, surely in whatever place my Lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also your servant will be. I really, really like that. Wherever, as you live, whatever place you are in, like, and he didn't, so it just kind of makes me feel like, yeah, he came into Jerusalem and maybe he thought he was going to, like, drink wine with David in the temple, but, like, that's not what his heart was set on. His heart was set on, like, the king, not what the king could give him. He wanted to be with David. And so he shows up in the very next day, and David is in like sackcloth and ashes, and getting stones chucked at him, and people are cursing him, and his own sons rising up and trying to kill him. And I just love that. It kind of like touched my heart. And the way it's strange, the way it totally made me think of the way that Naomi spoke to Ruth, you know? Like she said, turn around, Ruth. Like, don't come with me. I don't have anything for you. I can't. The Lord's hand has gone against me. Like, stay here." And she says, "Not on your life. No, like, your people, your God is my God." I forget how she said it. You guys know the passage, but like that. And that seems to be, I was kind of thinking about, like, why do you kind of, there's other passages like that too, where there's something in the heart of God where he kind of like tests, like, go back, turn around. Go back, it won't be good for you. And I think about Jesus when all the disciples were, all the people who were following him left him, and then he looked at his disciples and says, "Don't you want to go too?" You know? I think that there's like something in the Lord that's trying to bring us to this place. That's what I think, that like, establish your heart. Let's make a perpetual covenant. Let's say to the Lord, "I don't care. Wherever you are, whether it's in life or death, whether it's in suffering, whether you're reigning in the temple, or whether you're hiding in a cave from Absalom, where you are going to be, I'm going to be with you." And just leave the rest of that to the Lord. And don't be so quick to like know that we're supposed to reign and rule, you know? And let the Lord bring us through the right seasons, and bring us down, and kill before he makes alive, and wound before he heals. And the whole time, know that it's like, even if you know these things, it's still going to be hard and confusing. And you're going to have to like have days where you just say, "I don't know what's going on, but I trust in your salvation." Or like Job, you know, like, "Bless, I'm going to bless your name, even though like I feel horrible." And know that the Lord is like designing something so good. He is so merciful, so wise. He's doing everything he possibly can with infinite love and infinite wisdom to help you, you know? And so like let's just fling ourselves into his arms and hands, and let's stop trying to figure stuff out, and just and let's be where he wants us to be, and let's suffer when we need to suffer. And wait to rejoice, and wait for the real thing. It's kind of like let's do what the Gittite did. I think I'll stop there.